drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Have you ever been bowled over by an actor's performance in a film or play and wondered, how did they do that? Great acting is the type of thing everyone loves to talk about, explain, critique. In fact, we like to critique bad acting as well. But when it comes to actually doing it, few can count themselves as experts. Howard Fine is an LA-based acting teacher and the protege of American actress and drama theorist Uta Hagen. He's taught some of Hollywood's best known actors, including Will Smith, Bradley Cooper, Chris Pine, and Jared Leto. And he's my guest in the drawing room. Howard, welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
You are so happy, aren't you?
I couldn't be happier.
So what makes an actor a good actor?
It's their sensitivity toward life, the aliveness in their own being. What we call presence is when somebody is fully firing on all cylinders. You have presence, for example.
So do you think I'd be a good actor?
Absolutely. In fact, I've heard a story recently told by you that convinces me you would be a great actor.
So, okay, so keep going with this, needing to be fully present as well.
Fully present, fully alive, and any part of the being that is shut down, emotionally cut off, that doesn't work as an actor. And sometimes we get people who want to pursue acting and they're not emotionally available or they're not smart. I've never successfully taught an unintelligent person. Can't be done.
They're not smart.
Yes.
What do you mean by smart?
Sometimes people who fail at every subject in school throw up their hands and think, oh, then I'll act. But acting actually calls on reading comprehension. It calls on all sorts of skills. You may have to play a doctor, a lawyer, a judge. You may have to learn technical jargon. And if you're not well read, and I'm seeing an epidemic of illiteracy, and then somebody decides they're going to be an actor, but it's all about script analysis and reading text and understanding. So you have to be smart in order to be a good actor.
That's interesting. You called it an epidemic, which is a very strong use of,
yes.
of language,
yes.
which, of course, I have to go down that tunnel now.
Please,
let's travel in that tunnel together. An epidemic of illiteracy.
Yes. It goes with an epidemic of attention deficit disorder. I can see it in my classes all the time. I'm looking out there and they're looking everywhere but at me. And they are also so used to texting and quick result. And I'm guilty too. If a website doesn't download fast enough, you're on to the next one. But patience, concentration, it's becoming a lost art.
So does that mean you're seeing fewer people who are equipped to be good actors now?
Yes, I am. And I'm seeing a lot of people who are drawn to it for ego reasons rather than because they love the craft of it itself.
Okay. I reckon I'm going to challenge you on that one. I reckon that's probably always been the case. The dream of being on the screen or the dream, you know, Hollywood as this thing to attain, mm-hmm. that's always been there.
Yes, but we didn't always have reality television. We didn't always have YouTube. And with the advent of a quick road to success or fame of any kind, someone can become an infamous social media influencer and get enough followers to get actually a guest star on something. So with the advent of other paths besides paying your dues, working your way up, with the advent of that quick result, it's worse.
So when we look to, you know, movies or increasingly television, actually, which has become where a lot of actors end up now in obviously the Netflix
yes.
Stan generation, the ones that make it, are they all good actors in your view?
No. However, the ones that sustain careers are. So anybody can have a momentary success, but to sustain a career and go from role to role, your Meryl Streeps or your Cate Blanchett's, if you have that level of skill, you can sustain a career. Anybody can be a flash in the pan.
So is there something else, that X factor?
There is. There's a likability. What some people don't realize is if they have a chip on their shoulder and they walk into an audition, it repels. And so we can train people to develop a talent. You can't create a talent. But when someone has a real sensitivity, a spark, and they have a real desire to share it as opposed to impress, Thornton Wilder, who was a great American writer, said once, if you write to impress, it will be bad. If you write to express, it will be good. And I think it's similar in every area.
What separates acting from imitation then?
An imitation is a result or an idea. Acting is all about finding where the character lives inside you. One of the greatest misconceptions about acting is the idea of playing a character. There is no character separate from you as a human being. And I think, how many roles do we play in the course of a day? How many roles do you play in the course of a day?
I've played about 30 already.
Already today, yeah. Right?
Busy day.
Yes. And who are they? They're all you.
They are.
So training is about gaining access to every part of ourself that already exists, but it's knowing how to tap into that.
Okay. So what's the secret, if there is a secret, maybe there's not a secret, correct me if I'm wrong, but to sharing an emotion? I mean, I've got to say, when I was a kid, and I was interested in perhaps being an actor, I used to look at actors during a really emotional scene.
Yeah.
How are they bringing out those tears? You know, what are they tapping into? I was always intrigued, even from five. Where do they find that pain to make that real?
Most people by 18 have experienced everything on some level. Obviously, life deepens you as you go. But there's a process called emotional recall. And I teach people to take an inventory of their lives from their earliest memories to present day. And I teach them how to go back to moments in their lives and gain access so that when you wish to trigger it, you can. And there is a technique for it.
You've got to be a pretty resilient person to be able to do that on demand.
You are spot on.
And it takes. Because there's places, I've got to say, and I'm sure you're the same, where I just don't want to go.
You don't want to, no. And that's why it's the same as the fireman choosing to run into the fire. To be a really great actor takes guts. And you have to be willing to go to places that other people don't want to go.
Is that instant when you tell people that, or you go through that process, that people are prepared to walk through that door? Or do you see a lot of reluctance?
I see both. The ones who are, first of all, reluctance is healthy. If you really want to feel those things, you're not a healthy human being.
Yeah, you got to sort that out.
Yeah, right. So I call that an emotional immune system. You should have a resistance to it. Hopefully a boxer doesn't want to be hit. So you should have a resistance to it. But you learn to do it anyway because it's part of the job.
Your work builds on the acting theory devised by Uta Hagen. How did you come across her work, and walk us through her work for our many listeners who wouldn't know?
Sure. Uta was one of those few people that had a rare gift as both a teacher and an actress. Sometimes when actors teach, they're actually jealous of their students and they want to get up there and show everything. Uta was generous in both regards. She took the work of Stanislavski, as taught to her by Harold Klurman, and she started to look at the own craft and say, okay, are there exercises I can develop where actors can stay in shape in between acting gigs? And she was practical, constantly looking at how to get better. I had a high school drama teacher who knew Uta Hagen's work. So I had 3 years in high school already being trained that way. And we used to take trips from Rhode Island, where I grew up, into New York to watch classes at her studio. I was lucky. I got exposed to it at an early age. And later, we got to know each other personally, and she became my mentor and my really close friend.
So what are those exercises then in between acting gigs?
They're called object exercises. And before her, they didn't exist. It's akin to bar work in ballet or scales in music. It's physical life. It's emotional life. There's an exercise called Changes of Self, where you have to do 3 phone calls with 3 completely different relationships and realize that you can change character with each one. If I talk to a young acting student who's just moved to Los Angeles, or now with my studio here in Australia, I feel as if I'm Father Time dispensing pearls of wisdom from on high. If I speak to a scientist working on a cure for cancer, I feel as if I'm an idiot. So in all of us, there's this really smart person and this really ignorant person, this really confident person, this really shy person. They're all inside of us, and her exercises all help you reveal to yourself who you really are.
So the exercises are actually involve real life people that you may have interactions with.
Yes.
Do they know?
Sometimes, and sometimes they don't know that they're being used for class purposes.
Is it best not to tell them?
Yes, because then they become aware that the phone call that they're having with you is being scrutinized and observed and going to be used.
Fascinating. On RN, I'm Patricia Karvelas. This is The Drawing Room, and Howard Fine is joining us tonight. He's an LA-based acting teacher, and he's talking to us about, well, how to teach acting and his new studio in Australia. So in terms of doing all of this kind of work, let's talk about some of the actors that you've trained. Who have you worked with?
Well, with Will Smith for years, but most recently on the movie Concussion, where he plays Dr. Bennett Omalu. And Dr. Omalu is a living person. So that's an interesting thing to particularly tackle. And that movie was all about the football players and the concussions that they get, and the doctor who really broke the news that concussions are so much more common and so much more deadly than we realize. And so that was months of preparation. I would watch tapes of Dr. Omalu, help Will connect to the part of himself. And here's the example of not imitating. In the end, you have to find where it lives inside you, influenced by the real person, but not just copying them, because otherwise you don't really connect.
Is there a time, have you ever sort of hit a brick wall where you just can't access that person?
Yes, that happens.
Is that because the actor is no good, or sometimes the fit is no good?
Both can happen. Sometimes the chemistry between the teacher and the student isn't working, and sometimes there's a lack of talent. And there is such a thing. Not everybody can act.
Have you ever had to tell anyone?
I can tell them that the training is not helping them. I'll never tell somebody you'll never make it, because, first of all, acting coaches are portrayed terribly on television.
Yes.
In the media. One more crazy, obnoxious, tyrannical being. I will not watch some of those shows. Makes a mockery of my profession. But I will say to someone that the training with me is not helping you and you need to look elsewhere.
Has it ever been the case that you've got it wrong?
There are people who have worked that I didn't think would, but I
think... But you still think you got it right. You just think they struck lucky?
I think the industry got it wrong.
Well, but how often does the industry... This is actually, I think, goes to the point about what I was saying before, and you said enduring careers are the test, and you gave me a good answer. Yeah. But, you know, how much does the industry get it wrong? I mean, I feel anecdotally, just as a viewer with no particular expertise other than I love drama in high school, as a viewer, I feel like quite often the industry's got it wrong. I watch
shows where
I think that's just not working. Like this is terrible.
I agree with you. Two Cornell psychologists, Dunning and Kruger, did a battery of tests. The people who scored the best on the test undervalued themselves. The people who scored poorly overrated themselves. And I've seen that since I first started teaching. So when you have Dunning-Kruger, the title of their article is Clueless People Have No Clue. The fact that they're clueless disallows them to see that other people are talented. My point is, you get a bunch of talented people who are neurotic and insecure, and then every once in a while you get somebody who's got Dunning-Kruger, but they think they're great. And they can walk in a room and just on sheer confidence convince people. And on that day, sometimes we're attracted to people who have just the confidence, the moxie. But that's not ever where the true talent is. Truly talented people fight insecurity on a daily basis. But sometimes the ungifted win just on confidence.
You hear stories of actors who put themselves through all sorts of strife in order to achieve authenticity in their acting. Adrian Brody famously lost 30 pounds or something and practiced the piano for like 4 hours a day for the pianist role. Is there a sense to this approach? Is it a good approach?
To a degree. There's mental health. Mm. If you're going to play a homeless character, do you have to spend months on the streets? That's dangerous. However, you have to do homework. So what became known as method acting tends to be the real extreme of it. And I don't advocate that because you got to last a career and you cannot. We're playing with mental health and you can't set yourself up to have a nervous breakdown or to do something that's harmful. So if you're playing a drug addict, do you have to become a drug addict? No. But you have to spend time and learn about it. So there's a fine line there of what's healthy and what is, I think, unnecessary and not good for you.
So there is a level of method acting that you still think is worth pursuing, though?
Because if Will's playing Dr. Omalu, he needs to do that. I most recently worked with Austin Butler, who filmed in New Zealand the Shannara Chronicles, and Austin's been a studio for a lot of years. He did The Iceman Cometh opposite Denzel Washington on Broadway. Well, it's set in the early 1900s, before there was refrigeration. You had to know the level of humidity in that bar. You had to know the anarchist movement of the time. So that's homework that an actor a real actor will do, because how can you put yourself in the world of it? If somebody were playing a host, think about what they would need to know about what that involves. You can't act it without knowing those things.
No, and again, you can't pretend to be someone else. You've got to be yourself. It's the same thing.
That's why an actor should be the most empathetic person on the planet at the end of an acting career, because you've understood and justified so many people from so many walks of life.
When you workshop a scene with your students, you always ask them three questions. What are they?
What worked, what didn't, and why? And I want students to be able to self-evaluate so that they can take care of themselves on set and not be neurotically teacher-dependent. I don't go on set with any of my students. They ask, but I won't do it, because it's akin to, imagine a surgeon walking into the operating room and bringing their teacher in. I don't think it would inspire confidence.
I don't think it will inspire confidence either. There's a cliche of drama school being ruled by, you know, tyrannical and ruthless acting teachers. You've already alluded to this.
Yes.
There must be some truth to it.
There is truth to it. Listen, a lot of people with mood disorders go into it. However, it's not the norm. Most talented people are pretty strong-willed people. They wouldn't stand for it. I have students in my Monday night masterclass who've been there for over 20 years, on and off in between acting gigs. They're strong personalities. You can't abuse them or be obnoxious. The teacher is there as a colleague to help you improve your craft. That's why I'm there. So the other thing does exist, but it's unhealthy. It's dangerous. You are playing with mental stability. And if the teacher is mentally unstable, that's not a good thing.
Have you had those experiences yourself?
I have, yes.
What can you tell us about those experiences?
Well, it's the teacher who, instead of teaching a craft for arousing emotions, the teacher will yell and scream at you, get you upset, and then tell you, now do the scene. We call it emotional blackmail. So something will happen that wasn't happening before. Usually it has nothing to do with what's written, and the actor will never be able to repeat it on their own. So the teacher is not God. The teacher is not a therapist. If somebody needs therapy, go to a trained professional. Your acting class is not there for that. It's to teach you tools and help you use yourself more and more authentically.
It's been so fun to hang out with you. Thanks for coming in.
It's an absolute pleasure, and congratulations on everything good that's happening for you.
Yeah, everything good, not so much the bad things. Howard Fine has been my guest in the drawing room. He's an LA-based acting coach, but he also teaches all around the world, including here in Australia.